This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
You're listening to The Tillage Podcast with the Irish Farmers Journal.
Hello, and you're very welcome to this week's podcast. I'm Siobhan Walsh, and I'm joined this week by renewables editor at the Irish Farmers Journal, Stephen Robb. We're recording on Wednesday afternoon this week. That's the 15th of March for your records later on for weather and grain market reports. On this week's show, we talk land availability and solar farms. We hear ideas that you, our readers and listeners, sent in about the future of tillage. Talk big savings with urea on the tillage pages. We remind you of how to apply for the tillage incentive scheme. And as always, we'll have those grain markets and weather reports. Stephen, as I look out the window here on Wednesday afternoon, it's raining heavy here and has been all day. What's it like up north?
Yeah, Siobhan, I wish I could report back that that we're escaping the worst of the weather up here and that the sun is shining. But by God, it is far from shining at the moment. Look, it's been very wet ground. February has been okay up with us. You know, there was quite a few opportunities for work, not as much as further south, but still work was getting done. But yeah, look, March has kind of caught up with the vengeance. We did miss a lot of the snow, mind you, that you saw down further south, but it didn't really do much for ground. Ground was still bog and wet and still is bog and wet as we speak, and crops are beginning to look a little bit sorry of themselves now.
Yeah, so up in Donegal then, what way are people with winter crops? I mean, what's the acreage like up there? Is it back much?
No, I'd say we're not too far off average now, to be honest. A lot of the considerations and constraints maybe around winter cropping this year was guys just reassessing their rotation last year on the back of input costs. So I'd expect to see a reduction in winter wheat up here this year when we see the numbers. I know I myself have dropped winter wheat out of the rotation. It's just for this year, I know it's just too risky, and I know others have. But we've kind of balanced it off in favour of winter oilseed rape and a bit more winter oats as well. So I think we'll see a lot more winter rape up in this part of the world, or we certainly will see it this year, just purely because of cost and where we think the market's going.
Yeah, and good as well, I suppose, with the earlier harvest up there. But as you know, as things go on, weather you generally get tougher weather up there as we get late into the harvest, which is probably no harm to have it in the rotation. Stephen, fertilizer and spraying on winter crops, like is there nitrogen gone out on winter crops? And I suppose, did people get herbicides on in January or February?
Yeah, so guys would have been out with a little bit of early N in February, but not widespread, I would say, Siobhan. I'd say the majority of crops are still awaiting a sprinkle or something anyway. As soon as it dries up, look, there was a fair few crops received in autumn herbicide, so there was up here. Shortly after sowing, I didn't see anybody out spraying in February or whenever it was dry in March just yet. I know guys were out with trace elements, so they were, but I haven't seen too many guys out with herbicide just yet. And that's not to say that it didn't happen. Look, the conversation up here, Siobhan, given our proximity to the border, is whether or not we stick with the local guys, or some might decide to cross that border and see if they can get a better deal or a better price fertilizer wise. Look, and it's the conversation all around the country as well, especially as a result of IFA's demonstration this week. I'm not sure what you're hearing around the country.
Yeah, haven't heard too much on fertilizer this week. I suppose, look, the IFA did do that demonstration yesterday, and the green team in the IFA, in fairness to them, up at the front of that as well. And we're writing on the tillage pages this week. We might get to it a bit later on about savings that we can make. You know, fertilizer prices, I suppose, while they're dropping, they're not dropping fast enough for tillage farmers. So we need to look at other things. You know, as well as just searching around for the better price. So yeah, we might come to that a bit later on. When we're on field work, and I didn't mention it at the start of the show, Tramlines is back this week. Stephen, you're a big fan of Tramlines. you started Tramlines in the journal.
My baby, Siobhan. It was my baby, so it was. Yeah. Great to see it back.
Yeah, so Connor Keogh is going to be keeping in touch with all the farmers this year. Connor's doing a PhD in UCD. He's from Wexford. And I'm really looking forward to hearing from the Tramlines farmers this year. So I might just go through a few of them. I know you have them there as well, Stephen. Yeah. So Conal Moore, he's in County Galway. They have a contracting business at home as well. And Connor is an ag science teacher. So we'll be expecting really good things now from Connor. His students will all be following him.
Connor's fairly active on Twitter, isn't he? If anyone's
I think a lot of people will be familiar with him, won't they? Mm. Yeah. Jack Brown, you had Jack Brown on the podcast, Stephen, lately on the Young Stock podcast.
Yeah, definitely. Jack's a real interesting one now, considering what he's trying to do on the farm in terms of agroforestry, or silvio-arable is what they call it. Basically, to us and to many of the listeners, Siobhan, it's a surefire way of ruining a big field by planting rows of trees up in the middle of it. But there is method to the madness, and I think you're going to hear all about it throughout the year.
Yeah, really looking forward to that now. And it's good. We need an organic grower in there as well, because I know there is people thinking of making the switch, so it's important to cover it off. Patrick Keogh is very welcome back. He was a Tramlines farmer last year. I really like what Patrick's doing on his farm. Like, he's incorporating the livestock and the tillage so well. You know, he's doing
practical stuff, so it is like stuff that all of us should really be doing or certainly considering, and he's making a real success of it.
Absolutely, yeah. Alex Butler, then, another young farmer. We've got a good crew of young people this year. Alex is from Westmead. I'm really looking forward to Alex now this year. He's does he do a bit of contracting as well? But he's on his farm is on a bit on mixed ground as well. So he's gonna be a good one to follow on. He's established some of his crops through Mintill as well. So he's kind of on a bit of a journey there. And then Damien Feuer down in Kildalton College. I think that'll be an interesting one. Keep an eye on the students down there and what they're doing, and seeing what Chagas are doing. They have variety trials down there as well, so that'll be a good one.
No, I think that's a real good addition to the lineup this year, Siobhan. Just getting that kind of academic side of things as well, and seeing what's happening on their sites. Damien is top class, so I'll be looking forward to reading it.
Yeah, and we want people to think of studying you know, in crops as well. So hopefully it might encourage a few people along the way. Tony Bell then in Balbriggan. Some people will be familiar with Tony as well from Twitter. But Tony is doing a few very different things up in North Dublin there. he bails maize silage every year, which is one thing that people will maybe be familiar with. And he's doing a good bit of direct drilling and stuff as well. So
I think he direct grows maize as well, doesn't he? He does. That's really novel stuff.
So I'm really looking forward to Tony. Yeah. There's a few guys up north then, Stephen. I might let you take on the second page there.
I see Alistair Craig is kind of our Northwest correspondent. So anyone who's listening, who would have joined us last year on the Itlis trip, we would have went through Alistair's farm. So Alistair is a monitor farm for the HDB this year. He's a mixed farming in the Mavati, on reclaimed land, not too dissimilar from ourselves. So look, really, I think it's a unique farm. We would have had farmers up in that part of the world who would have been farming on reclaimed land before, but the land varies so much depending on where you are. Like Jonathan's land is completely different to Richard Keane's land, which is completely different to Alistair Craig's land. So it just shows you the variation in land in that part of the world, all of which is reclaimed. So he's going to be an interesting one.
We stopped in beside Alistair, like the field was right at the sea walls, wasn't it, Stephen? He was growing lucerne in that field last year.
Yeah, he was. One thing about Alistair is he's not afraid to try new things, and the lucerne was proven to be a success for him. So it'll be interesting to see what he's reading, I suppose. The other northern correspondent, Siobhan, is Neil Patterson. Neil Patterson will be a nephew of Ian Chambers, near Seaford and County Down.
Alan, sorry,
Chambers, and I suppose many of our listeners will probably know Alan as well, just through Itlis and through our interactions with the Ulster Arable Society. Really good, solid farmers. They know what they're doing, operating a plough-based system. So I think they'll be one worth watching as well. If we head on down the country, Siobhan, we welcome Eamon Coogan back. So Eamon's farming in Slane in County Meath, and he would have been working with us last year on Tramline.
Yeah.
Another solid farmer as well.
Another young farmer there, Stephen, as well. And farming on difficult enough soils there in Slane as well at times. So he's another interesting one to have.
Speaking of young farmers, and he'll be absolutely delighted to hear that, is down in County Cork, John Dunn. many will. John did not tell me to say that, Siobhan, I promise. But John is, many of our listeners will know John because he works with Gold Crop and does all the variety work down there, but also farms in his own right. Solid guy, really good and technical in his commentary and analysis. So I think he's going to be a brilliant addition to Tramlines as well this year.
Absolutely. I'm really looking forward to hearing about the trial work down there. Yeah, it'll be good.
Yeah, you have Kevin O'Gorman as well, Siobhan, lined up this year from County Kildare.
Yeah, so and Kevin and his brothers as well. So Brendan and John farm with Kevin, and they're farming in a good few counties in order to get ground for the spuds. So they'll be starting to plant in April, and I'd say we'll touch base with Kevin around that time. So we'll keep an eye on the spud growers through Kevin.
Fantastic. And finally, you have Mark Halley as well lined up.
Yeah, so Connor will be chatting to Mark. Mark is from near Cashel in Tipperary and a contractor as well. So always good to have the contractor view, because they're seeing plenty of different crops and different farms along the way as well. So while we'll be hearing about Mark's crops, it'll be good to hear, I suppose, a general overview of things as well. I think they're a good group, Stephen.
They are, Siobhan, hands down, and fair play to Connor and yourself for pulling it together. I think that's what makes Tramlines, and that's an important addition or feature to have in the journal, kind of every year, to get that geographical spread amongst what's happening in the tillage scene around the whole island. And certainly it's going to be the same this year. So I'm looking forward to reading it as it goes on.
Yeah, and a big thanks to all those farmers for committing to it, because it is time. that they're giving up every time they do it, and taking pictures and everything as well. So we really appreciate that. And it was good to hear when we contacted some of them, a lot of them said, well, I read it every week, so I better do it because I've been reading about other people, which is great to hear. So thanks to them all, and best of luck to Connor with it for the rest of the year. Okay, Stephen, staying along the theme of farmers in the paper, we asked, I suppose I had an opinion piece in the paper last week about the future of tillage and where things were going, and land access and all that kind of thing. And we asked our readers to send in their opinions, their thoughts, their suggestions for what could be done. And I was taken aback by the amount of responses that we got. So across the two pages in news this week, we have opinions sent in from tillage farmers. And some more of them are going up online, and I'll put some more in the paper next week on the tillage pages, because in fairness to people, Stephen, the amount of people that sent in replies, but not only just replied, but put huge effort into the responses that they sent back in, is just, it's really good. At, I suppose, what is a negative time in the tillage sector, it's great to see people, you know, still flying the flag and putting the effort in to try and find solutions.
Absolutely. I would have had a look at the page, Siobhan, before it went to print, and it's striking. It really is. The responses are striking, and echoes echoes all of our situations, because we're both tillage farmers ourselves. I think that this should be a bright time for tillage. This should be our brightest time for tillage, really, considering just how well we stack up in the ongoing climate debate. But the reality in the ground is something very different. And I think it's captured very well by the respondents to your survey, which is running this week.
Yeah. So, and just look, there's responses in from across the country as well. I'm just looking at the first page here. Donal O'Keefe in Westmead, Tim Ronaldson in Kildare, Wicklow, Cork, Leash and Kildare again, and people coming back with, you know, 6-point plans and suggestions. There's one suggestion in there about introduce a taxation policy to restrict corporate entities from availing of agriculture tax loopholes. And I know another farmer wrote in, and I'll probably have it in the paper next week, you know, the tax incentives that are there for rent and land, they want them to just go to tillage land, and very strong views as well on paper acres in some of the responses as well. You know, that the and criticism of the current nitrates rules and the banding, and the, you know, the push on dairy to either cut cows or find more acres, and as we've said over and over in the past few weeks, the unintended consequences of those rules are that tillage land is now being taken out of production, and that's coming across very clearly in all of the letters that have been sent.
Yeah, I mean, that's the binding theme, so it is really amongst all of the respondents, is unfortunately the pressure that the sector is coming under because of changes in nitrate rules in the dairy sector. And we are, you know, we are going to be a casualty off that. And look, that's the, it's there in black and white. Those are unedited responses from the growers. So this is what's happening on the ground.
And calls as well from growers, you know, for a reward for people who use Irish grain, and for more value to be placed on Irish grain. And I mean, we're all worn out saying that, but I suppose time for action is now. And to the people who sent in those responses, you know, don't underestimate the power of putting pen to paper, and don't be afraid to send those responses to maybe where they need to go, you know, whether it be a politician or your farm organization, your representative body. You know, get your voice heard, because as one farmer said, I know I read it in some of the responses, you know, if something isn't done soon, it'll be too late. Stephen,
it'll be irreversible. So it will, Siobhan. That's really what they're saying.
It's a strong word, but it's true, Stephen. Over the surveys that we've done in the past few weeks on where land is going, Stephen, I suppose some of the land, there's talk of solar going into some areas of tillage. And I know the grain growers came out last week in the paper, you know, kind of saying maybe something needs to be done to stop productive land going into solar. And I know this week you have a response back in from some of the solar energy bodies.
Yeah, absolutely, Siobhan. So look, that piece was run last week in the Farmers Journal, and it was a comment from the Irish grain growers to call for a conversation around the use of prime tillage land, prime agricultural land, for the use of solar panels, because there is a major move happening around the country at the moment to develop Ireland's solar industry from practically nothing. The response Siobhan got, the statement got a strong response from Ireland's solar industry, the Irish Solar Energy Association, and the Micro Renewable Energy Federation as well. Both of them sent in strong responses to ourselves, pretty much along the lines of, well, really, it's the landowners and it's the farmers' prerogative to decide whether solar is right for them. The same as they would decide whether dairy is right for them, same as whether they would decide forestry or spuds or any number of other activities is right for their land. And that's the society that we live in. I suppose the Irish Solar Energy Association tried to delve into the figures a little bit more. One tillage farmer who would have got in touch with the Farmers Journal quoted a figure of about 3,000 acres of solar farms, 3,000 acres being lost to solar farms in North County Dublin, stroke Meath. The Irish Solar Energy Association would say that, well, there's only actually been about 900 to 1,000 acres of solar farms connected in 2020, connected to the grid, that is, and the first solar farm ever in Ireland of scale in oil was connected in 2020. So it's really only starting from 2022. It's only really starting from 2022. Now, that 3,000 acre figure, they're probably referring to planned solar farms as opposed to constructed and operational solar farms. Look, I suppose County Meath would be a hotspot for solar, as would other parts of the south, primarily due to grid connection availability and also the topography of the land. So that 3,000 acre figure might not be a million miles away from the truth. The ISEA tried to point out that even off the 1,000 acres or so of solar farms which are operational today, you know, the area under panels is actually closer to about half of that, to about 500 acres, because you can still, in theory, farm the areas in between the panels with sheep and whatnot. Now, how much of that's actually being done, it's minimal, but it is an option. The Micro Renewable Energy Federation, they would have come back on the same line, saying that, look, it should always be the farmer's right to make the best use of their resources for their family and businesses. And land is always going to be a precious resource, and there's always going to be competition, as we're seeing at the moment between dairy and tillage. They said that renewable energy technologies like solar, or even growing silage for biomethane production, or hybrid dry or crops, or converting to forestry, that's the farmer's choice, and we should accept that. But they went on to say that they think that the market and grid capacity and, you know, personal farm preferences should be enough to ensure that the allocation of land for energy versus food production balances itself out. Now, they did say one thing, Siobhan, which is kind of interesting. He did acknowledge the case for possibly restricting the amount of solar PV or forestry that can secure planning within a particular area or parish to ensure that balance, which I thought was an interesting comment coming from the organization. Possibly the same should be done for other farming enterprises if they're going to do the same for solar and forestry. But it's certainly one to think about. Just in terms of the Irish Solar Energy Association as well, Siobhan came back and gave us some figures. So the government has a target of about 8 gigawatt hours of solar PV to be developed by 2030. So that's about 20% of Ireland's electricity needs. If you work that back, the actual solar farm component of that, Siobhan, will need about 24 to 26, so you could call it 25,000 acres or so of solar farms by 2030. So that's the equivalent of about 0.2% of Ireland's total agricultural land, or 3% of the current tillage area. So they're saying more or less that it's not a significant amount. Now, I know if a farmer is listening to me who has lost land to a solar farm, he'll be cursing me up and down, but look, those are the numbers.
Yeah, okay. And you're going into this on the renewables page this week. You have the food versus fuel debate, Stephen, on those pages. And I think it's fair to say in that, you know, a farmer should be able to make their own decision. And it's unfortunate to see land going into solar, maybe good productive land. But at the same time, that farmer, you know, if they're not making a living off the farming system that they're in at the minute, it's very hard to say to them, I don't think you should be doing that, you know. And what came back in those opinion letters from farmers was, you know, I'm being told to go into dairy. I'm a young farmer and I feel like dairy is my only option. These farmers don't want to be dairy farmers. So, you know, people have to have choice, and maybe solar is one of the choices that they choose to take. And if they do, it's their own prerogative.
It is, like, and I suppose the current tax regime as well means that of a farmer's total land area, less than 50% of it can, only less than 50% of it can go to a solar farm. So in other words, more than 50% of it has to stay as, you know, as farmland, which kind of ensures that armchair farmers, you know, won't just let their whole farm go to solar farms or whatever. But, like, I guess just to finish on this, Siobhan, we've covered another piece off in the news pages as well in the Farmers Journal, just on another solar farm, which was actually turned down in County Meath. It was a 300-acre solar farm, so it's a substantial development. But the local residents were very much against it, because of the height of the solar farm. So in other words, I think part of the solar farm was up in a hill, so it would have been very visible, and it was actually turned down for not exactly that reason, but its visual impact was a factor. So you'll wonder why solar farm developers are targeting the flatter land. It's to ensure that it doesn't become an eyesore, whereas I know there's been calls to target marginal land or hilly land with solar farms, but I think you draw a lot more attention to it. So that's just the argument from the other side of the house as well.
That's really interesting. And I suppose it comes back to that 3,000 figure as well, and those solar, the association saying that there isn't that level in solar farms. Yes, you know, they all, a lot of these farms still have to go through planning, and that one didn't get through. So,
well, Siobhan, you're 100% right. And I've spoken to other ones in the industry, or other people in the industry, who think that the amount of land that is committed to solar at the moment, you know, a percentage of that's never ever going to see development, because not just because of planning, but because the whole financing model is changing, because it's more expensive to borrow money to build these things, and the margins are kind of low anyway. So I wouldn't just be holding my breath that we're going to be seeing 25,000 acres of solar farms by 2030.
Yeah, okay. Look, people can keep an eye on that on the renewables page in the paper anyway, and throughout the news section as well. So thanks for that, Stephen. I want to be a little bit positive now. We're talking kind of very negatively about land and land and tillage. And one thing to remember at the minute is the tillage incentive scheme is still there. And I know people were critical of the tillage incentive scheme, you know, last year. So basically the scheme means if you have grass and you plow it up and you plant a tillage crop in it, you can get paid €400 a hectare. And if you did that last year and you keep that land in tillage, you get paid €200 a hectare this year. So that scheme is still in place for 2023. The terms and conditions have not been released yet. So I just want to be clear on this. I have it on the tillage pages this week because I feel like we need to make sure that people know about this scheme and that it is still there. But the department have yet to release the proper terms and conditions for 2023. But I think it's safe to assume a lot of the basic things that we'll need to know will be fairly similar to last year.
We don't know, Siobhan, is it open to new applications?
So what we think, no, it is, Stephen, as far as I know. So you will be able to, if you have grass this year, to convert to tillage, you'll get that €400 per hectare payment. There's plenty of mixed farmers out there who have a bit of grass, and it's definitely an option on those farms. And there are farmers, I've spoke to farmers, and as bad as the land access situation is at the minute, there are farmers who have secured bits of grass to put into tillage this year. So all the details are on the page, but there's grassland is not grass, so to speak, in the scheme. So what's considered grassland is the scheme. In the scheme is, you know, things like miscanthus, red clover, potatoes is in there as well. It's definitely worth a look at the terms and conditions, and it's €400 per hectare. So it's a significant amount of money to make things a little bit easier.
Absolute sense. So it does if you can manage it.
Yeah. So just remember that scheme is there, and it is there to try and increase tillage in the country. So it's there to be used. On the other tillage page this week, Stephen, I mentioned it earlier on, but I just noticed Kieran Collins was doing up figures on switching to urea, and the heading on the page in the paper this week is thousands to be saved by switching to urea. And I'm not exaggerating there. So Stephen, Kieran has wrote here, he basically said, you know, most people are going to use CAN in their compound or whatever when they're putting out their compound on their crops. Yeah. But then for the top dressing, they might switch to urea. Kieran calculated that people can save about €7,000 on 40 hectares of winter wheat by switching to urea on the chopped dressing, and on spring barley that would be about €3,000. So I actually worked it out on different prices. So taking CAN at 760 and urea at 840 and protected urea at €910 per tonne, there's actually savings of like €3,400, I think it is, when using urea, and then €2,890 if you use protected urea. So that's a massive saving to be made.
That is a serious saving to be made.
Yeah, when I saw Kieran putting those figures together, I said this needs to go into the paper and make sure people know about this. And I know plenty of people, you know, maybe switched to urea last year in some shape or form, and I know certainly a lot more people are going to switch this year. But the big thing then, Stephen, is the spreading of it. And, you know, even I spoke to a farmer this week and he said, we used urea last year, we got on fine with it. But there was one day he did think it was windy, but it wasn't too windy. And they chanced spreading it. And he said the field was striped. So people do need to be cautious when spreading urea and make sure their spreader is set up correctly.
So a spreader on, we'll say, 28 metres tram lines, like, is that pushing it even with conditions right? You know, are we really saying that it should be 24 metres or so as your limit?
Yeah, like, people are kind of saying once you get over the 20 metres, and certainly once you're at 24, you're definitely at more risk when spreading urea. Now, I know there'll be people out there will say when they're on their 28, and maybe people will say when they're on their 36 they get on fine with urea, but I would be sceptical about this. And I think maybe where people are on bigger tram lines like the 36 meters, maybe those people are gone to liquid nitrogen, and certainly maybe that makes more sense on those farms. But I think, you know, if you're gone to 24 meters, and I would even say over 18, you need to be very careful in how you're spreading things. And even if people are on 18 and lower, still when you're spreading your fertilizer, you should be doing tray tests. Should be doing tray tests between different types of fertilizer. Because, you know, if your spreader is on level, or if you switch from 18-6-12 to 10-5-25, there's a massive difference in how those compounds spread, or different types of fertilizer, how they spread. So you just want to make sure that everything is set up right on your sprayer. And then, look, some spreaders, there's so many differences in spreaders, but you might need to change vanes and discs when you get to those big meters as well. So people just need to be aware and need to be extra careful if they are making that switch.
Yeah, what about urea versus protected urea, Siobhan? Are we I suppose it's protected urea, just your insurance policy, really.
Yeah, I would take it as an insurance policy. But you still need to, even if you're applying protected urea, you still need to apply it in times that are appropriate for fertilizer spreading. So ideally, if you're spreading protected urea, you still want a light shower of rain after you spread it. And we must remember as well, protected urea, it cuts it's the ammonia emissions. So basically, urea emits ammonia, which is emitting nitrogen to the air. Protected urea, it has an inhibitor to reduce ammonia emissions. It doesn't cut out all ammonia emissions. But that coating as well, it only lasts for between 2 and 3 weeks at full capacity. So, you know, if you spread protected urea, we've no issues with it at the minute, but if you spread protected urea and it's dry, you know, let's say you put it on your spring barley as your top dressing and it's dry for 2 to 3 weeks, then, you know, ammonia will be lost once the inhibitor starts to deteriorate. So it's an insurance, I suppose. If you're, what did I say there? 3,400 was the saving where you use urea, and 2,890 where you use protected urea. So for the difference in those prices, it's 510 euro. It's significant. Mm. But if the urea is going out at a risky time of the year, you know, maybe that extra 500 euro is worth it, because, you know, you could be losing nitrogen to the air, which ultimately isn't going to go into your crop. So that's definitely worth thinking about.
Absolutely. So an insurance policy, but not a get out of deal free clause to do whatever you want with your urea as such.
No, you still absolutely got it not. Yeah. And look, Chagas have plenty of research there on CAN and protected urea. No yield difference between them, but certainly money savings to be made across the board. Okay, I think we'll move on, Stephen. I think grain prices is our next stop.
Tell me you have some good news for us, Siobhan.
No, I don't.
We were going so well there.
I know, we were. We'd gone positive after the start of the show, but no, grain prices are unfortunately not looking good this week. Now, they did kind of pick up a bit yesterday, but just to give you an idea, so the December French wheat price dropped to 260 euro, 75 cent on Friday. So that was down 11.25 euro per ton on the week before. So a significant drop. Now it did increase to 267 on Tuesday evening, so it did pick up a little bit, but there was still a fiver in the difference there. And I'm just looking it up here now, on the, just to see what the current price is while we're recording Wednesday afternoon. Let me see, it's still loading. December 267.25, so it's still similar to Tuesday at the minute. Maize has dropped back similarly, and then just wait for it now on the oilseed rape. It's oilseed rape is really not going well at the minute. So on the November price, 498.25 on Friday evening, down 43 euro per ton.
That's a hell
of a
drop.
Before. Yeah. Yeah. So, and by Tuesday evening, then it had dropped to 489, or nearly 490 on Tuesday evening. And look, there's a big oilseed rape crop coming out of Australia. And then look, soybeans are playing into it there as well. And there's bits of rain coming where it was needed, across the Atlantic. And rapeseed, just to give you an idea now, today it's dropped further. So it's dropped another fiver today. So it's at 284.75. on Wednesday afternoon. The Black Sea grain deal, of course, is the extension was until the 19th of March. So that's playing a lot into markets at the minute, most likely. Mm-hmm. So at the weekend, I suppose we'll tell the outcome of that deal. And then other things, you know, the winter wheat in America is playing into it as well. But basically, look, there's loads of grain out there, and there's little demand, and that's the basics of the market. To put that back to Irish prices, Tierlan came out this week with 220 euro per ton for green feed barley, and 228 euro per ton for green feed wheat. So similar to the last few weeks. But look, hopefully,
yeah,
grain prices maybe
We supported them during their time of need last year, high fertilizer prices. So it's time for them to support us this year.
Hopefully this week could play into next week's price there. So hopefully that the things pick up now this week. And the FOB creel was also at around 300 euro per ton, that spot price. And it's kind of been steady there. Nearly the last few weeks it moved to 295 at one stage. It's actually back to 295 today. So that's where that is. So there was an offer out last week from Bournemouth on that. So I think we'll leave grain markets there. And the weather report is the last thing to do. So we have the report in from Met Éireann. So Patrick's Day is showery. Showery and blustery, 12 to 15 degrees on Friday, Saturday. Showers will merge into longer spells of rain early on Saturday morning, clearing around midday, and temperatures of 9 to 13 degrees. Sunday will be a wet day. There's no good news here in this forecast. highest temperatures of 7 to 12 degrees. You can only hear the disappointment in my voice. And unsettled conditions to follow with rain or showers throughout the week. So, and I was looking at that earlier on, you know, there's heavy and light showers throughout the week. So certainly looks like there's no drying in the next week.
Doesn't sound like
so.
It's going to be a sown week anyway.
No, definitely not. And going to take a long time to dry at this stage as well. And the rain is still pounding down outside the window here now as we talk as well, Stephen.
Yeah. And end of the month or April could be a very busy month.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it looks like we're kind of back to where we nearly always are at this stage, just now. But look, we can't complain either. There was a lot of work done there with great comfort over the last while. So that's good as well. So that's where we'll leave it. Stephen, thanks for joining us.
Anytime, Siobhan.
That's great, yeah. And thanks, of course, to you for listening. Thanks to Claire and Jerome back at base for editing. And keep the tillage flag flying.
We hope you enjoyed this Irish Farmers Journal podcast. You can find all our podcasts at farmersjournal.ie/podcast and on iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.